staying financially illiterate and not in good relationship with your money is not going to help that. Actually getting literate and becoming empowered is your best act of protest against the system.
Welcome to the Phase 4 podcast, inspired by Vishen Lakhiani and Ajit Nawalkar, co-founders of EverCoach, a division of Vine Valley. In this podcast, we speak to coaches and creatives about where they were, where they are, and where they are going. This is the intersection of what we focus on expands, and your story is your superpower. My guest today is Sarah Penfold. She's a financial wellness coach helping you break through your glass ceilings and get into the right relationship with money. And today we're going to talk about money and a bunch more. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, JP.
I appreciate it. And so one disclaimer at the beginning, we're both in Canada. And so some listeners in the U.S., maybe the tax part that we will talk about will be different taxes. You'll have to find out for your own country, but we'll try to cover as much as we can. But before we even go anywhere near there, I always kind of like to start off with, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, well, one of the first things I like to say is that I don't come from money. I don't come from a family of accountants or financial advisors or stockbrokers. Like, I've never even worked at a bank. And I really feel like that's important, because when I kind of unraveled my relationship with money, there was this, for me, there was this unspoken hierarchy where there's people that work in the profession that know all the things. And then there's all the rest of us that, you know, have to defer to an expert to learn about or be good with their money. And that's just not true. Yes, the financial landscape, I kind of relate it to the medical field. Like, there's different level areas of expertise, and I'm kind of like your general practitioner. But that's sort of what I like to start out by saying. And then also, I come from really humble beginnings. I grew up on a farm in Southern Ontario, farm girl. And, yeah, totally. And the first, you know, almost decade of my career was in tourism and wilderness, like guiding and therapy and stuff. So, yeah, it's just been an interesting career journey for me to find this work. And I didn't find it till, you know, very solidly midlife. And like many people who do find it at that point, it's like, oh, I wish I knew this stuff sooner. But it was such a transformational journey for me that I just had to share it and teach it.
Yeah, I love it. I appreciate the humble beginnings and that you don't come from money, because not everyone does. And it's very easy to look at it and be like, well, that's not for me. I can never get that. And yeah, it's true. We have to definitely start when we're younger, but starting today is the next best time. So
exactly.
You did say something back there about like the system, the bankers, the people who are in the know already, and then the rest of the world. And is that that patriarchal thing or no?
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's a bunch of different layers here. Patriarchy is definitely embedded in the financial system for sure. So is systemic racism and inequality. Like, we can just, I'll make that blanket statement now, because I want some of the things that I say are generalizations and they don't have that nuance, but that's always the undertone, is that all things being equal, they're not equal in finance and, you know, in general. But I will say that the system is, you know, it's corrupt. It's a racket. There's no doubt about it. I'm not here to convince anyone that it's not. One of the things I learned, though, is that staying financially illiterate and not in good relationship with your money is not going to help that. Actually getting literate and becoming empowered is your best act of protest against the system. Because there's all kinds of hacks. And that's, you know, that's what I love to help people find. And, you know, not even just hacks, but just basic principles of investing, you know?
Sure. My mind's getting sidetracked when you said that to AI, where people are like, it's the end of the world, or it's so dangerous, or I hate it and I'm never going to use it.
Well, I mean, it's like anything new, right? Radio was new at one point. Television was new at one point. Smartphones were new not that long ago. You know, anything new and different is going to feel overwhelming. And sure, there's like Doomsday and all kinds of Hollywood movies that, you know, take us down that path with AI, and that may or may not be true, but there's always a growth edge in the evolution of being human, whether that's like society, technology, interpersonal, whatever.
Yeah. And just for the rocket thing, if people are skeptical about it, all you're going to have to do is look at like November this year, when we have an election in the US, and the day after the election, it doesn't matter who's the president, everything's going to go through the roof. And so How's that possible? There's so much uncertainty for a year, and then 10 hours later, like, we all know that there's going to be a president elected. So why is it? And that's just like one little thing I'm thinking. But can we talk maybe a bit more about that, or and add in or layer with the limiting beliefs we have around money?
Sure. I'm a growth junkie. I love personal development. You know, why that's why we're having this chat. And like it or not, there's things that happen in our life early on that have impacted us throughout our lives. Sometimes those are like big T traumas. Sometimes those are little T traumas. Up to the age of like that, you know, under 7 is sort of the big ones, and up to 14, and then how those stories continue to get reiterated and grow with us throughout our lives because of things that we create. Like those are sort of the like when you talk about limiting beliefs, that's how it happens, right? You know, we have I'll give you an example for me specifically with money. So my parents gave me a very generous allowance when I was a kid. You know, solid middle class family. We ended up moving to Guelph. My dad was a professor. Mom was a therapist. And so, you know, we were solidly in the middle class. I had a great allowance, and the responsibility they gave me was that I needed to buy like all my things. So my toiletries and we get a little bit of an extra a few times a year for clothes. And the benefit of that is that when I moved out, I was always the roommate that like tracked the bills, split up the phone bills, paid the hydro, all that kind of stuff. And so that was a gift on one hand. On the other hand, they didn't teach me to save. They taught me how to spend. So that was a really interesting unraveling. The other piece is, I mentioned, you know, growing up in a family of farmers. My dad's family is like the lineage of farmers. And I had a lot of like dread about retirement. How much do I need? Like, single woman, it's just me, you know, on my income. And I had a lot of anxiety around that before I started healing my relationship with money. And what I unraveled is that there's a part of my belief system with the farming that like you work until you heal over kind of thing. There's so much physical labor in farming that is directly related to the money that you can make, that was just built into me through the lineage. So that was when I learned that, it was like an instantaneous, like, okay, this doesn't have to be mine anymore. So things can happen, can shift quickly, but there's other things to unravel that take a little bit more time.
Yeah, I love this. So you could carrying this limiting belief around, and then you realize it, you can just let it go right then and there. And then part of like having that allowance when you're younger, doing all the things, but not learning how to save, you learned how to do all the things, but not learning how to save. Then you end up going through your life doing that until now you kind of figured out like recently, but then you kind of go through your life, well, I don't need to save, and because you're just not aware, right? So I think awareness is a big key for everyone.
Well, it sounds so weird to say, JP, but the more I get deeper into this work, it's so true. Saving is a habit. And I love talking about habits. That's a big piece of the work that I do in my programming, because, you know, we are the result of our habits at the end of the day. And it wasn't that I didn't know that saving was important. You know, different employers that I had that had like RSP savings and matching programs, I would always sign up for that. But I would never do it myself. Like, I would never say, oh, I'm going to take a few hundred dollars or $100 for my paycheck and set it aside for me. It was always done external to me. And so developing that habit and feeling okay holding on to money is something that a lot of people really need to cultivate. It was something I had to learn, and I'm always surprised at how it is that way with other people. And the realization when I say that to people, that saving is a habit, is like, yeah, you know, it's kind of a gentle way to say it, because it's not critical. It's not saying they're doing something wrong. It's just recognizing that, it's just a habit I need to do. Okay.
Right. And just like any habit, once you start getting used to it and lock it in, it just becomes so simple. Part of your subconscious for money, it's part of your check before you even spend any money, so you don't even see it. I love the idea of habits, and you're saying about personal growth, and I'm a junkie for that too. I can't get enough. Like,
I know.
It's almost like addictive. Like, and it's almost like, oh my God, does this end? No, I'm not sure if it ends.
It doesn't. It's not always easy, and of course that's why people resist it, I think. And once you start it, while it's difficult, there's so much richness that comes on the other side, and money is no different. Looking at your money can be so confronting. It was extremely confronting for me. So some detail about my story is, you know, it was 5 years ago that I really solidly started, like, found the coach that helped me and moved me forward. And then I worked in her program with her for a number of years. But before that, for 5 years, I had tried three different professionals. One was purely the energetics, didn't do a thing. The other was structure, like creating structures for me, kind of helped. But for me, the piece was really that intrapersonal relationship with money. Because you can go and you can learn about literacy and all the things. Like, there's great websites and all kinds of information out there. It's the why you don't that I'm really interested in.
I love this. And you said something back there, RSP. So for our American friends, that's a 401k, right?
That's a 401k. That's a retirement savings. Yeah.
All right. And then, so I saw a cool post you made the other day about tax in between the two countries, and I was shocked. The difference is, yeah, go ahead.
That post blew up, and it's so funny. I tried to quantify in that post that I was comparing one variable. So the taxes are, it's so complex. They are different per province, per state. We pay taxes at checkout. Like, there's a lot of detail and a lot of nuance. So I was only comparing federal taxes in that post. And I also was shocked that how between the Canada and the US, we're almost dollar for dollar, we're paying the same amount in federal taxes per tax bracket. And in some cases, there's a little bit more in the US, and that is not the narrative that we get, right? I lived in the States for 4 years, and that's one of the things that I was thinking, is like, oh, my take home is going to be a lot more because of taxes. And it wasn't. And that was the first kind of shocker to me. I mean, I don't think it's any secret, but like, the bulk of the American tax dollars is going to the military budget, right? So anyway, we don't need to get into all the cultural stuff between Canada and the US. But yeah, it is shocking. And I will say, I have no problem paying taxes because, frankly, I like driving my car on paved streets, and I like being able to turn on a tap and have water, and I like being able to go to public parks and enjoy that. I also think that I also believe I don't want to have to pay any more than I have to. And there's lots of ways to work with that, you know, how much you're contributing to your retirement savings and all that kind of stuff. So that's my riff on taxes. And if you want to see the post, go and read the comments. I get raked across the coals, and I just sort of left it after a while because I'm like, people are missing the nuance of what I'm trying to say here, but whatever.
I got it. It was really clear. And just right away, it's like, only for this. But anyway, how about somebody starting, right? Somebody listening to this conversation who's realizing, man, I do have limiting beliefs around money, and there's trauma and following these patterns. But now they can go, oh, I have the awareness. And where do I start, though? That's the question.
Yeah. Without a doubt. Okay. The gentle way to start, I would say, is just start. Like, look at the information that's coming in at you, right? So what are you listening to, podcasts? Who are you following online? Just start peppering in some money stuff, right? So that's the easy way. And you start hearing things over and over, and it just becomes a little bit more normalized. Once you actually are ready to take a step, I think without a doubt, it's looking at your numbers. It is always the place I see clients have the first big energy of resistance against. I totally get it. I did too. Because we're confronted with our past. We're confronted with all the decisions, all the habits, right, from our past. And it can bring up a lot. It can bring up guilt, shame, all that kind of stuff. And as a coach, I'm here for it. Because I've lived through it, and I do my very best to try and feel it, but let's not get caught in it. Let's get into action, because that's where your power and control is. I don't want to bypass any emotions that come up, because I think those are important to look at and process, but not to get stuck there. I have programs to do at least that, right? To help you take a look, you get a chart, you can have it for life, and you map everything out, and then you can start setting up your plan. So that would be my advice to someone who wants to get started.
Awesome. Is there a difference between the emotions that come up we have about money, but then separating the fact that money itself is not emotional? It's just an
energy. I love this. Yeah, I agree. So that was a big unlock for me, that I was equating, one of the things that was keeping me stuck was I was equating money with the system. You know, if I was going to get good with money, I had to somehow engage with, you know, Wall Street, and therefore I was going to become corrupt and bad because I was going to get good with money. I discovered it's very different. The system is a racket. Money is actually a really beautiful thing. And when I started reading and researching and doing all this stuff, if we go back, a lot of people say, well, we should just get back into bartering. Sure. I think that if we want to do that. However, what I came to believe is, bartering, there was a beautiful thing, because it was actually, this is like the core of the actual exchange for me. So I have something you need, you have something I need. We're going to exchange it. And there's mutual benefit, mutual trust, and that is really, really beautiful. Money came along and actually was an innovation to that, because if I need shoes and you only have chickens to barter, then I need to keep going and finding someone else. But this third entity of money now allows us to have a little bit more flexibility of how we're getting the things that we need. So that, for me, that's at the core of it, right? Is that it's exchange. Sure, you may be exchanging with, your internet provider or Netflix or something now, but you're also getting something, I hope, of value back. The other analogy that I like to use is, that a car. a car isn't inherently a bad thing. But if I, maybe kind of morbid, but like if I get behind the wheel and I'm in a bad mood or, you know, have been intoxicated, I can be a danger to people on the road. So money is like the vehicle. It's who's behind the driver's seat. So if you're behind the driver's seat of your money, it can actually be a really amazing force for good and transformation in the world. Yeah.
100%. I love that. Yeah. It's the person with the money. A bad person's going to do bad things with lots of money. A good person's going to do good things with lots of money.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what would it look like working with you? Is it just one-on-one or is it groups or what would that kind of look like for someone?
Yeah, so I really believe in a choose your own adventure when it comes to money. I like to think that, of course, people want to come and work in community, and I have group programs to do that. I really believe powerfully in the group because shared stories can often help us move past those like guilt and shame pieces. I'll share one story myself in the group that I joined when I made this transition for myself. One of the things that was so kind of challenging for me was that I was 6 years behind in my taxes, actually 7 returns, because 1 year I had a business tax to do as well. And I was so ashamed. And when I shared that in the group, there was a woman who said, oh my gosh, I'm in the same boat. And so we ended up having like dates where we would just get on the phone, work on our taxes. And without a doubt, without that woman, I wouldn't have been able to, in the 3 months I did that program, get through all of that paperwork and get it off to my bookkeeper. So there is power in a group. Now, if you have interesting financial circumstances or, you know, that shame is so powerful that you don't want to be in a group and you'd rather work one-on-one, there's options for that. And then I also have evergreen programs. And so this, I really wanted this to create flexibility for people's financial situations, for their lifestyle. You know, the groups move a little more fast paced. So if you need more flexibility, there's the evergreen, and then you can pepper in one-on-one sessions. So it's all the same curriculum. It's just how you take it that or sign up for it that works for you.
Yeah. There's something powerful about the group where we think we're doing it and we think we're alone and we think we're feeling this and it's just us and nobody else. And then you go into a group and talk about it and you find out, yeah, oh my God, everyone else is going through the same kind of thing as I am.
Totally, totally. And so many people that I have worked with have the same thing. And I had it as well, that like, oh my gosh, I'm the only person in the world that doesn't know about money or what that TFSA or Roth IRA acronym stands for, you know? No, we're not taught this stuff in school. If our parents didn't know it, we didn't know it. And so it's now up to us to learn. So,
yeah, I love this conversation. So there's, there's something there. As we like earlier talking about trauma, limiting beliefs and all this around money, and I'm 44. And so like just the time in history where we are, every generation before me was living in lack. Now we have like Amazon will come to your house and bring everything in an hour. And so those limiting beliefs that were our parents or their parents or their parents, they're just there because that's what the world was. But the world's not like that anymore. And yes, for some people it might be, but if you're fortunate enough to be listening to this conversation, you're probably living in a more abundant life than the generation previous. And so that's where you got to check your own limiting beliefs. Like, is this my story about money or is this my parents' story about money? Because my parents grew up as kids coming out of like their parents were in the war, right? Like my grandparents were living in the Great Depression. And so it makes sense that they had those beliefs. But so I guess I'm saying like, how do you teach people maybe to check their own beliefs?
Yeah. Well, I think part of it's awareness, right? Like we talked about at the beginning, and 100% agree, and same situation, grandparents in the Great Depression, parents just immediate post-war era. So, you know, oh, find a job, stay there till the end, get the pension, save, don't, you know, it's all about, not that saving is bad, but there was a tension around it, right?
Like scarcity almost, right?
Exactly. And so yeah, the awareness. And then I actually am trained in a tool, EFT tapping, and I use that with on myself and I use that with clients. And what this does, it's an incredible modality that will help you kind of integrate into your system different beliefs. So the way I like to describe it, this is really oversimplified, but we have something that happens to us, or we have a belief that's like emotional, and the emotional side of our brain takes, you know, like it defaults when something comes up that like gets us into that state. So the emotions are running, and the logic brain like exits the room. And, you know, whether it's EMDR, another therapy that I've used, or EFT tapping, which is beautiful because it's available to anyone once you learn it, it just helps integrate both sides of the brain and like turn down the volume on that emotional response. So I do actually monthly free calls to my community, and we do group tapping calls. And then I would also do it in group and one-on-one settings. So there is a little bit of personal work, whether you're working independently with a therapist. I have some clients that also have a therapist that they're working through this stuff on, or, you know, we can work through it together. But yeah, there's some processing there. And what I will say to people is, again, like I said, a lot of this stuff is not easy to look at or work through. And my challenge is, the energy of actually working through it, there's all kinds of different stats about how quickly you can move an emotion or shift through something, anywhere from like 2 minutes to 8 minutes. I've actually, you know, sometimes hard truths that I've had to realize take a little more time, like a week to process. I go through what I call the sacred wallow. I'm just like grumpy with myself for about a week, and then I get over it and I move on. But how much energy have you been holding on to not looking at that thing? Versus spending an hour, a day, or a week just allowing it to move and settle through your system so you can get on the other side of it and get on with shit.
Yeah.
And inevitably, there's way more energy holding on to, stifling, don't want to look, you know, there's so much more energy in that than there is actually doing that.
100%, right? Because you're blocking yourself. You're blocking everything. You don't want to address it. You don't want to look at it. It just piles up. But if you move through it and look at it, and it starts to flow or open, and it's like the EFT, emotional freedom technique, right? There's just a block kind of somewhere in your, and so you're releasing that block and allowing everything to flow. And then EMDR, eye movement desensitization processing. So yeah. You talked about energetics earlier. We're all about energetics here and we love it. So yeah, I'm glad you talked about those. As we begin to wind down, if this episode resonates with you, please like, subscribe, share, follow, but no hard sell. And reach out to Sarah. Sacred Wealth is the name of the company. And what a beautiful name. But yeah, reach out and have that conversation. And at least you get started that way. That's one way to take action, is by doing that. And so, Sarah, I ask everybody, this is a phase four podcast, and phase four in the six phase meditation by Vishen Lakhiani is all about creating your future 3 years from today. So where is Sarah 3 years from today?
I love this. Well, I am still working a day job. So this is a side hustle. So in 3 years, I'm definitely doing this work full time and having a way bigger impact. And I'm probably going to be living in North Vancouver, close to the mountain.
Nice. You don't want to come back to Toronto?
No. I'll leave the sleet and the slush and the rain to you.
Yeah. One other thing is about, let's say someone's investing now. I don't know how deep you are in that. Let's say somebody's investing. What are some good angles to go towards? I know it's always changing. It depends on yourself and how much and all these kind of things, your age. But what would be some good things? Like we talked earlier, like the day after the election, stock market's going to go up and these kind of things. So I guess as far as like things like crypto, Bitcoin, gold, oil, stocks, or just diversify everything.
Diversify everything, especially if you're just getting started, honestly.
ETFs.
It's my opinion that, like, don't put money into something that you don't feel comfortable with. And the way, I mean, I talk a lot about ETFs, exchange traded funds, index funds and stuff in when I, you know, do the investing stuff, because you know, that's a great place to get started. If you want to get deeper, like if you get intrigued by the markets and the cycles and everything, sure, then like you can take a little bit more risk. But one of my favorite freaking quotes ever is from Warren Buffett, of course, very famous investor. And he's, the quote is that at Berkshire Hathaway, which is the company he runs, their kind of MO is apathy bordering on sloth. That's their investment strategy. And I love that so much because it's like set it and forget it. And there is, here's one of the things that I see is that people are so, I'll use the word desperate to get out of the situation that they're in, that they can fall prey to these get rich quick schemes. And that looks different in all kinds of different ways. The thing about money is that it is not fast. Okay. So it can happen faster than you think, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. So if you're just getting started, robo advisors, index funds. I always recommend looking for socially responsible investments, SRIs, and ERGs. Yeah. So many. I can't even remember all the acronyms myself, but there's more ethical investments that you can put into, and the system will tell you that they're not as lucrative as some of the standard index funds, but that has not been my experience. So,
yeah, you're bringing a good point that makes me think, like, invest in the things that you use. Like if you, depending on what you use all the time, and then you're going to get dividends on like stuff you're already buying anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. Rule one investing, Phil and Danielle Town. They talk about that a lot, and they subscribe to the Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger style of investing, which is invest in the things that you love, you know?
Those two are about to get even more rich.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're sitting on something like $120 billion of cash, just sitting on it, like waiting for that. Yeah.
Pretty, yeah. Right? Well, and now's the time to buy, right? Because the market's on sale.
You know, that's what they're saying, is that they're sitting on that because what's about to happen. And Berkshire Hathaway, their stock right now is worth $1 million for one share.
Yeah. And, you know, while you say that, so I'll just start like breaking down some perceptions about investing. You don't have to have $500,000 to buy a share in Berkshire Hathaway. So let's just like talk about that, right? So when I talk about index funds and ETFs earlier, what that looks like, I like to equate it to a gift basket. So maybe you like chocolate and you like wine and you like salted roasted peanuts or something, but you don't want to put all your money in the salted roasted peanuts. So you buy a gift basket, which has a little bit of the peanuts and a little bit of the chocolate, a little bit of the wine and the crackers and stuff. And then you invest in the basket, right? So that's how index funds kind of work. So, you know, like, if you invest in an SRI, there might be some green energy in there. There might be, you know, medical research. Like, oh, there's all kinds of different things that would be in there. And then you just buy the fund. So you're not buying one company.
And these are safer investments? They're probably safer, right?
They're safer, yeah, because they're diversified, right? Like if you're a venture capitalist, you're not going to invest in one company. You're going to invest in 10 or 20, assuming that one or two of them are going to do really well. Index funds, more than one or two of them are going to do well, but it's the same principle. There's many things in there. Some of them are going to do well and balance out the other ones.
Yeah. And the idea of, yeah, you don't have to buy an entire share for $500,000. You can get a little bit. This reminds me of crypto, like a Satoshi, is it called? Bitcoin is just like a slice of a Bitcoin.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Very cool. And so as we kind of wrap up here, I always like to allow the guests to kind of take it wherever they want. Maybe tell us something we don't know about you, something you like to do, future plans, programs, upcoming events, or anything that maybe I didn't cover.
Yeah. So in terms of programming, if you want to just jump in my world, I do a couple things for free. So I do, like I mentioned, those monthly EFT calls. And then there's some free downloads on, I have a free tap-in script download, and then there's another free download for a three-day workshop that I've done, or a three-part workshop. In terms of actually then taking the next steps, there's programs I have to actually look at your money, like I said, which is one piece. And I pulled that piece out of a bigger program. So if you really want to go and like look at getting literate, understanding yourself more in relation to money, which is what I call financial EQ, and then really building out that system for your spending, for your savings, for your net worth, all that kind of stuff, then the Financial Foundations program is the one to do all of that. And that launches about two or three times a year. So in the new year, in the fall, and then usually late spring.
Beautiful. And then my final question is always, how can people reach you and find those places?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at Sarah Sacred Wealth, and Sarah has an H. I'm on TikTok, Sacred Wealth Coach. YouTube also at Sarah Sacred Wealth. And then my website is just sarahpentiful.com. And everything's linked through Instagram. So if you just want to go there, you can go to the links and...
Yeah, and we'll put all those links in the show notes as well. And Sarah, I'm so grateful for your time today and your knowledge. And this was really awesome. And thank you.
Oh, thanks, JP. It's always good to riff on money. I could talk for hours.